welcome to minute 53 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Mark Hoffmeyer of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and Movies, Films, and Flicks. How you doing on this lovely Wednesday morning?
I can't. I'm just going to go with the flow today. I'm gonna be like a twig on the shoulders of a mighty stream. I'm just going to flow with this episode. I'm going to relax. I'm not going to try to jump to the end first. I'm not going to pretend like this is the next chapter and make a long intro, then have us go back and do another intro where I'm saying this intro.
Why would that happen?
It's going to flow. I'm just going to flow with anything. Whatever happens, I'm ready to go.
There you go.
Like a nice twig.
That works. That works.
What's a mighty stream? Have you ever seen a mighty stream?
No.
Is that a mighty stream is, I guess, a rain? You know what? There's a stream in the back of my in-law's house. And when it rains, it floods. So I guess that's when you see a mighty stream.
Could be. And we're talking about a twig. So, you know, it doesn't need to be.
Twigs can be pretty big.
No, but I'm saying the mighty stream doesn't have to be that strong. Because it's a twig. You know, snap like a twig. You know, it's not something that's very, it can't be that thick.
What's a twig size? Let me type this in. Twig size. Because I'm curious to know how big, because I'm seeing a pretty big twig here.
Maybe it's just zoomed in.
Twig. Wait, this is like a computer thing. Twig, wood twig size. Wait, of array? What's happening here? Twig size, wood. Yeah, I mean, there's some pretty big twigs.
Okay.
I don't know. Huh? To each their own, right? To each their own.
Yeah, that's true.
So, mighty streams, twigs.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Jerry Seinfeld bit.
It actually does.
What's a twig? What's how the big, deal with twigs?
How big is a twig? What's the deal with twigs, right? So,
what's a mighty stream?
And what's a mighty stream with a twig inside of it?
With a lampshade.
And what about the buttons? So,
100-acre parking lot. That's more Chris Walken.
Yeah.
You should read this. You should read the transcript of this episode like Chris Walken.
Especially the song, because we got a song here in this minute. So we'll see. Yeah. So episode 53 begins with the car driving along the highway and ends with Neil once again trying to keep his cool and not get too upset at Dell. Right, so not much happens in this minute. You know, we have a lot of the driving. We see the car going along the interstate, and the two of them are continuing their conversation, which yesterday it ended with Neil basically saying that he wished that Del would have let him die. And Del then responds and says, "You remember what I said about going with the flow?" And Neil goes, "How am I supposed to go with the flow when the rental car agency leaves me in a 100-acre parking lot with keys to a car that isn't there, and then I have to hike 3 miles back to find out that they don't have any more cars?" Now, okay, there's a few things I want to mention about this statement that he makes here. First of all, as we mentioned yesterday, that's pretty impressive that they know it's 3 miles. Because remember, we said that it's what was it, 2.2 miles or something like that. So it's pretty close. As you know, he's not exaggerating and saying that he's got to walk 10 miles or anything like that. He's pretty close. So they did their research for this one. But the second thing is that how could it be that there are no cars left? We saw hundreds of cars in that parking lot. There's no way that all of those cars are reserved.
Now, I just had to fly to Florida. And I didn't know it was spring break in Florida. So I had to book a rental car last minute, and it was $400 a day.
Wow.
I had to rent it, so it's fine. So, but all of the major, most of the major companies were already booked. They already had reservations on it, so I couldn't get a car. So I had to go to a place called Sixt, S-I-X-T, and they were fine. They were great. Same price as everyone else, but that was the one place where I could find a car because all the other ones that were reserved or didn't have any cars in stock.
That's really cool.
Maybe those cars
at least my car from Sixt.
Oh, really?
And I live around, I live
Nice.
across the world for me.
I mean, they were great. They gave me a sporty little Hyundai. I had a good time in it. It was fine. I blasted 97X, my favorite new alternative that I listened to growing up.
Oh, wow.
So that was fun driving around Florida listening to that. But it,
But
I mean, most
no,
of them were
but
spoken
when you
for,
saw
like, or
there,
reserved.
but you would say that there was no cars, you know, that if you wouldn't be in a, would you be in a parking lot that is filled with
Well,
cars? I mean, again, this is the day before Thanksgiving. This is Wednesday. We're talking Wednesday afternoon. So anyone who is going to be flying in for Thanksgiving and they're going to be renting a car, most people are not going to be showing up on Thursday. They're going to show up the day before.
yeah, maybe this that was the one rental place he picked, and those were all different rental cars that were there.
Right, whatever. I mean, we saw him leave from Marathon. I guess that's the only rental car agency they're allowed to use in the movie. You know, they didn't want to get sued by using any of the others. So that, but I mean, there, like I said, there are seven rental car agencies at the St. Louis airport as of 2022. So you'd think that he would have been able to find something, but whatever. And then, you know, Dell's response is, "I got a car, no sweat at all." So Dell was able to find a car in one of them.
You know what, though? Sometimes you have to take a breath. And I think that Steve Martin was so past taking a breath that he didn't just stop and think, hey, there's a lot of cars here. He just wanted to curse the earth. He wanted to yell at somebody. I don't think he, Dell shows up and is Mr. Personable. Like he could get, he could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman wearing white gloves. He's just a real, and he actually does do some great salesmanship later.
Yes.
But I do
He did it
think
already.
that
He did it already.
he's,
He did it 2 weeks
oh
ago.
yeah, you're right, you're right. He's much more chill. And I think that he works angles where Steve Martin, he's not, I think he was just more, he just wanted to yell at somebody more than he wanted a car.
Right.
He was looking for a confrontation.
That's true.
So that's what I think.
Okay, that's true.
So maybe he, his mind, when you do get angry, your judgment does get clouded. You get all the endorphins rushing. You get different things flushing, rushing through your blood. You do get kind of tunnel vision for revenge.
Right.
So maybe that's what he, because he's a pretty pissed off dude.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That is fair. So Neil's response to Dell after he says, "I got a car, no sweat at all." So Neil says, "Wait, Dell, you're a charmed man." And Dell goes, "Nope. I know. You just go with the flow, like a twig on the shoulders of a mighty stream." And then Dell starts laughing. Now, do you know where this phrase possibly comes from? Go with the flow.
Mark Twain.
No, good
No,
guess.
go with the
Good
flow.
guess, but it's not. So
No, where does go with the flow come
I
from?
found two different sources that have two different answers. So one of them is that it actually comes from the writings of Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor. He
Oh.
talks about the flow of happiness and thoughts and surmises that most things flow naturally, and then it is, in his opinion, it was better to go with the flow than to try and change society. And then in the 1960s, this is a phrase that was ascribed more to the hippies, you know, about taking life easy and stuff like that. But then I found another quote that says it's actually from Shakespeare. Apparently in Julius Caesar. So one of Brutus's lines is, "There is a tide in the affairs of men, which taken at the flood leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves or lose our ventures." I found that pretty interesting, the way that connects there.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You're teaching me stuff.
That's what I'm here
Look at you
for.
doing this real. I love
That's
it.
what we're here for.
That's what I'm here for.
And then the rest of this minute is just the two of them sitting there listening to a song that's, you know, they're continuing along with the, you know, we see the two of them inside the car. Now it quickly changes and we're now in nighttime. Okay, so I looked it up, and on November 25th, 1987, sunset in St. Louis was at 4:42 in the afternoon. Okay, so we're only talking, this
Oh.
is only 5 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. And again, as we mentioned the other day, it's a 4.5 hour drive. So they theoretically can be in Chicago by 9 p.m. But for some reason, don't get there. But we'll talk about that over the course of the next few weeks.
Oh, I know why though. I know why though.
Okay, why?
But you don't want to talk about that
Go
yet,
ahead,
do
tell
you?
me why.
Well, Michael McKean. Michael McKean.
Well, Michael McQueen, Mike,
his scenes were cut.
And he's in Wisconsin.
And he said that the cop told, he told them that they had driven 100 miles past where they were supposed to be, but his scenes were cut.
Yes.
So they just probably got tired and drove.
Because he's a state trooper of Wisconsin. They somehow got to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you do get tired and you just aren't maybe Steve Martin was driving. Maybe.
Well, we'll get to the script in a little while and we'll have some answers to that also as to why things are taking a little longer. Now, one of the things I found that was really interesting is, you know, the whole idea you mentioned about the twig on the shoulders of a mighty stream. So there is a composer by the name of DJ Kosmonaut who actually composed an instrumental ambient song by that name. He loves this movie so much that I listened to it. I think Neil should listen to it in order to calm himself down a little bit. Maybe that'll help. Don't really know.
Nothing's calming him down.
Right.
He is, oh man. But I gotta say, I guess we'll talk about it next chapter.
And then
we'll talk about it next
chapter. And then basically we have a song playing called 6 Days on the Road. Okay. Which was
Georgia Overdrive.
Yeah. Which is performed by Steve Earle and John Mandukas. And they're known as the Dukes. But we're not really, I mean, I have the entire lyrics, but I don't think we really need to get into it because it doesn't really make much of a connection to what's going on here. And then we get Del playing with the passenger seat of the car.
I feel like you should sing it.
No, I'm not going to do that. No. No.
Come on.
You're not going to get me to do it. Sorry. Not going to happen. I'll do Requiem for a Dream first.
Okay.
You're going to sing it?
And they use that in the Two Towers.
You're going to sing it?
Yeah. Clint Mansell, Lux at, was it Lux Eterna? Lux at, I forget the name, but they use it in Two Towers as well. That's a famous score right there.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Burned in my memory. Jeez Louise.
So Del starts playing over the seat and the seat starts moving back and forth and moves to the right. It moves to the left. It goes up. It goes down. You know, there is a loud whirring sound. And, you know, it doesn't sound very realistic that the car is going to be making that much noise, but it's still pretty damn funny the way that they do it. And then at one point it moves to the right and then it like jerks to the left and he hits Neil as he's moving across and stuff like that. And Neil starts getting pretty upset about everything that's going on. And he looks like he's ready to just blow his top. But we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what he actually says and how this conversation continues. So did you have anything?
I have big issues with the next
chapter. All right, well, we'll get there tomorrow.
Big issues with the
next chapter. We'll get there tomorrow. Do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
I have a big question to ask you, so just be ready.
When, tomorrow or today?
I mean, listen, no, like, it's fine. It's a good – I was thinking – I guess I kind of want to ask you a question. You hate me. Right. You don't like me. And you know, I'm driving from Georgia to San Francisco. You can pick one movie character that has to ride with me to give me the worst trip on the planet. Just the most annoying person that I have to be stuck with for an entire trip. And you're doing this because you don't like me. Who would you put me with?
Oh, that's so simple. It's so simple. It's not going to be Del. I know that's what you're trying to aim for, but it's, I'm not going to be that easy on you. I'm going to make.
All right. Who you put me with?
You really, really suffer. Who do you think I'm going to give you? You have any idea? I'm going to give you Alan.
Uh-uh. No idea.
I'm going to give you Alan from The Hangover.
Oh God.
You didn't expect that.
I'd put you with I think I would put you with Ma Fratelli from The Goonies.
Ooh. Or Sloth. No, Sloth would be fun being with. Yeah. Hey, you guys. But
imagine.
No, I think if you want to make someone suffer, if you're going to put them with characters from The Goonies, so you got to put both the Fratelli brothers. the two of them are going to be in the car and they're going to be hitting each other and screaming at each other the whole way. I think that would be even more annoying than having Moff Fratelli next to you.
I'll turn this car around if you don't stop hitting each other in the back seat. You know how many arm punches? I think they would land 7,000 arm punches on each other during that trip.
Yeah, I think so. That's a great question. Thank you.
That's my prediction.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for that. So we're going to go into the script. Now, the script, this, I'm going to try and go through it pretty quickly this minute, because there are 6 pages of the script that were cut out that happen here. I mean, there's a lot that happens. I'm not going to go into too much detail. I'm just going to explain more or less what happens. Okay. First of all, Del says that when he got the car, he didn't have to waste one drop of sweat in order to get the car. The car in the script is not the same car that we get to see here. It's actually a green Lincoln. And then we get a shot in Neil's house. Okay, so Neil's wife is sitting there having dinner with both sets of grandparents and her kids without Neil there. So then Neil's father says to her, "I thought Marty did a wonderful job with her poem today." And then the other grandfather says, "It's a shame your dad missed it. I'm sure he feels the same way, Walt. He'll see the videotape." So basically, we get a lot of bickering between the grandparents about why Neil isn't there. And then Susan's father says,
that's not necessary.
Susan's father says, "That's no way to watch a kid grow up." And Susan's father is actually played by a known actor, which is great that, you know, you get to see in the script that he actually has more to do. Because in the final cut, we get to see Richard Hurd in just a scene at the end where he doesn't really have anything to say. You familiar with Richard Hurd? Do you know him?
Let me look him up.
He was
right
a character actor.
Richard Hurd.
He was a character actor for many, many years. You know, he was in All the President's Men. He was in The Mule with Clint Eastwood a few years ago. He was in Get Out. He was in The China Syndrome. He was in tons of TV shows. I mean, he was in the Quantum Leap episode where he played a Doc Brown type of character.
Oh, wow.
You know, he's been in a lot of things. So in this movie, he just has, his most of his stuff ended up on the cutting room floor. Basically, the grandparents are arguing with Susan about, you know, they're disparaging the fact that Neil isn't there. And then the phone rings. Susan gets up from the table, goes to the kitchen to answer it. And then we see Neil in a roadhouse. He's on a payphone in a roadhouse. And there's like a lot of noise around him and stuff like that. And he tries to talk to her. And she says, "Where are you?" And he says, "Huh? I'm on a payphone. What? Some roadside dump. I'm in southern Illinois." So they made it to Illinois at this point, right? And then as he's talking, Del comes over and taps Neil on the shoulder and asks him to give him $5. And he says, "I'm trying to talk to my wife." And he says, "Well, I need $5. So Neil says, "We only have $23 left." And he says, "Don't worry, we'll be fine. Give me another $5. So he ends up giving him the money. And then he gets back on the kitchen. And Susan says, "I'm sitting here with my parents, with your parents, your kids, and I want to know what's going on." So he goes, "What's going on? I'm trying to get home. I've had the worst day of my life. I've been on the train that caught fire, a bus, the back of a pickup truck. I walked 4 miles through the snow with 400 people." And then she goes, "All I know is John got home last night." And Neil goes, "He left after I did. How could he get home?" So when Jay was on the first week, we had the discussion as to whether John, you know, John Dole, played by Ferris Bueller's father, would actually have been able to get home before him. And apparently the script confirms that he was able to get home beforehand. And then she goes, "You tell me. The airport's been open since this morning." And then Neil says, "You want to hear a dog story?" She turns to her father-in-law and says, "He's not making any sense." So her father-in-law takes the phone and starts talking to Neil. And he goes, "How you doing?" He goes, "Pretty good. Yourself?" And he goes, I'm having a hell of a time getting home. But other than that, I'm doing all right. "When did you guys get in?" And he goes, "Oh, we got in this morning. And do you have any snow?" "So a little bit. The storm was pretty much just north of Chicago. Other than that, it's pretty smooth sailing." So they have like this typical conversation, which in the middle of this whole thing. And so his father isn't really, you know, says to Neil's wife, "Susan, you know, I have no idea what you're talking about. He seems fine." And he's trying to get his father to help him. And then Susan is back on the phone. And he goes, "Dad, you have to help me out a little bit. I don't think Susan believes a word I'm saying. So there's this whole subplot in the movie that Susan apparently thinks he's lying to her about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, cheating,
And
right?
then she
Glad
goes,
they
"You
cut
got
that.
that one right." And then like she's shocked on Neil's face. And then he starts banging his head against the wall. And then she goes, "I have a pretty good idea what you're pulling, Neil, and all I can say is your timing stinks." He goes, "I'm pulling something, I'm trying to get home, however I can." And she goes, "Well, how's Dell doing?" And he goes, "How's Dell?" And she goes, "Yeah, how's Dell?" He says, "Why do you want to know about Dell? He's fine, a pain in the ass, but what do you want to know about him?" She says, "You just make sure that you don't come home with his panties in your briefcase." You know, she's assuming that he's having an affair with somebody, and he's referring to this person as Dell, right? And he goes, "Funny you should mention that. I dried off my face with them this morning." And at that point, she hangs up the phone on him, which is something that happens quite often in the script. She hangs up on him every single time. Oh. And then they get back in the car and they start driving. So, and then he starts playing with the seat positions, because at this point they switched drivers and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's fun reading this, but I can completely understand why they cut out those 6 minutes or six pages. They're not necessary. You're not needed here. No,
nothing with the story. No. Oh, I mean, this is a good look of you read the script and you watch the movie and then take notes. I mean, it's a good screenwriting class just to kind of see where that came from. And I would say Richard Hurd was also in Sergeant Bilko.
Ooh, there you go. You got that connection. Excellent.
That's right.
All right. So every Wednesday we do a little segment called the Hughes Hump Day. So Mark, why don't you give us your top five John Hughes movies?
Oh gosh. Okay. So we're saying like directed, correct? Not written.
You can
under
do whatever you want.
Or...
I've been pretty lax with that. You can do either.
Well, I'm just gonna go with directed because I love these five. Uncle Buck is five. Maybe I should have it at three, but I just haven't watched it recently enough. But just hearing him talk to Bug, and then the giant pancake, and Macaulay Culkin, and just I love that movie. I watched that movie so much as a kid. So that's my five. Four is Weird Science. You know, you got Bill Paxton. Just, you know, it's a fun movie to watch when you're a kid. Excellent film. Three, Ferris Bueller. I will say, I adored Ferris Bueller when I was young. And then when I got my 20s, I loved it. And then I got my 30s, and I'm like, I don't like Ferris anymore. Because then he just became a punk. But I think it's a very effective movie. Then I'm going to say two is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, because I think it's one of the most rewatchable movies.
Yes.
That, I mean, it is wildly rewatchable, and that's what gave it
you're talking
two.
About
number one
from Hughes, or you're saying in general?
From Hughes. No, in general. I mean, it's 9 minutes. It's very episodic in nature, with different episodes that happen. So you can step in whenever and you're like, oh, I'm in St. Louis. Like, you know what's next. You know the journey. And it's just a very rewatchable movie. Number one for me is Breakfast Club, because what I like about Breakfast Club is that, you know, some people, it just, you have a sensitive jock. You have the bully that's actually kind of nice. You get, like, I think it's one of the rare films that I don't think many of these have been made, where they explore the inner lives of these kids and they actually make them seem like somewhat three-dimensional characters.
Okay.
I think there's an excellent villain with the principal. I just think it's one of those movies that, for me, watching for the first time when I was probably 11 or 12, I just hadn't seen anything like that before, because, you know, I actually grew to love John Cusack in cinema too, because I felt like he was so different than everybody else as well. But in this movie, just the way they explore it, the single location, the way they bond, the way they fight, I just thought, for me at 11 or 12, the soundtrack, geez Louise, I mean, I think I would watch some of these movies before Breakfast Club. Like, I have no urge to watch it, but I just remember the feeling I had watching it when I was younger, and just what I felt like it was epic. I just, the emotions, the talks, the speeches, I dug it. So I'm going to put Breakfast Club at number one.
All right. Very cool.
That's my ranking.
Thank you for that. So every day we do a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either my guest or myself will give a little story, anecdote about something that has happened to us along the journey of life. Mark, what story you got for us today?
So this is a story of when I took my GRE, not GRE, my GRE, yeah. So my grad school test in Korea. So I got my degree. I taught high school. I went to Korea to teach, and I wanted to get my master's. So I studied for the GRE. You know, you get the test, and you apply for your master's degrees. I studied in a Dunkin' Donuts. I did all my vocab. I did all the math. I took my writing portions before. There's two different sides. I did my writing section, came back. Then I had my GRE on a Saturday. But the problem is I worked until 10:30 every night. No, I worked at 10 o'clock every night. And on Friday, I got to work at 10 p.m. I got a cab to the bus, got there. I had a bus leave at 11 p.m. for Seoul, Korea. I got in Seoul, Korea at, what's my time frame? I'm at about 12:30 right now. I quickly went to the subway until it closed down. Then I think I caught a cab to someone I had never met. His name was Bumsu, and he was a friend of a friend that was going to put me up. It was awesome. But then I got there. Bumsu wasn't there. He showed up late. And then we walked for what felt like a half hour. And then by the time I got ready to sleep, it was awesome that they took me in. Ready to sleep, I probably had like 1 hour. And so I tried to sleep, but I was so paranoid that I would oversleep. I didn't sleep. Then I got up and I went to the wrong school. And there's another guy there taking the GRE who went to the wrong school. So we sprinted, got a cab, got to the right place. I realized I had nothing with me. I didn't have a pencil. I didn't have anything. So I went in the bathroom just to like collect my thoughts, use the bathroom. And I saw a pencil on the urinal. So I took the pencil. It was sharpened for some reason. I took the pencil, ran upstairs. I was the last person to walk in that room. They were about to like close the door on it. And then I was the second person to leave. So I walked in, got it done really fast. I was like paranoid. I was like, what's going on here? And then I was the second person to leave. And I remember I was so stressed out on the ride home. I went and I bought a bottle of soju, got on the train. I got on a bus that I took the hour and a half journey back. No sleep, felt like I was in a daze. And I remember just sipping on my bottle of soju. I passed the test. I got into grad school, but it was just the craziest, like not even 24 hours. It was like the craziest 12 hours of my life. To get to the test, to take it, and to come home, I would say 14 hours, but I was on buses, trains, cars, no planes. But I did do a train, a plane, and a car once in Korea on one day. But yeah, that was my gnarly journey of how I took my test to get into grad school.
Cool, that was a great story. So yeah, at least there was no falling ice along the way that you'd have to like run around in between.
And Bumsu was awesome. He was cool. Like, we just hung out. He had just gotten out of his military service there, and we just kind of chatted. And then it was awesome. He put me up, but he was like a friend of a friend. But yeah, I was so afraid to sleep because I thought I wouldn't wake up, and I went to the wrong place. Gnarly.
All right, great. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, Movies, Films, and Flicks, Movies, Films, and FLIX, and Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. You can look us up on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can listen to us everywhere. So just type that in.
All right. And to find me is very simple also. You just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website. So until tomorrow, you're fine. You're fine. Are you going to forget this every time? Let's do that again.
Well, yeah, I think I am.
So until tomorrow, you're fine.
You did it too fast. Ready?
So, until tomorrow, you're fucked.
You're fucked. There it is. I was looking at my notes for the next episode.